are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Iran starts to pull out of the nuke deal as U.S. officials say the White House has overblown the Iranian threat. Sound familiar? Meanwhile, with Georgia and Ohio, six states have now nearly outlawed abortion in this country. Trump appears to have lost $1 billion. And in several years, more money than any other individual in the country, but more likely than anything, it was a way to avoid paying taxes.
It's because I'm smart.
One dead, eight injured in another school shooting. Elizabeth Warren releases a $100 billion plan to deal with the opioid crisis. Trump about to release a new immigration plan that, of course, will undoubtedly favor Europeans and wealthy people. Warwick, Rhode Island school system wants you to know they suck. Donald Trump, meanwhile, pardons a war criminal, because Republicans. Jacob Wall fails again. And in South Africa, if you are in South Africa, go vote. Elections are today. All this and more on today's Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen.
What's going on?
Well, the power is out on this, on the iPad. Yeah. You don't need to, you don't use that during your show anyways, do you?
Not typically.
Yeah. Maybe it's time for you not to turn it around.
Maybe Mercury's in retrograde.
Maybe Mercury's in
it
retrograde.
It does feel like
you
that.
Stop.
Is that the case?
I don't know.
Is. Oh.
My Mercury's always
it's
in
not
retrograde.
Real. I just like to say that because
yes,
it's funny.
Is.
What do you mean it's not real?
Well, Mercury does go into retrograde.
Sure,
it doesn't
sure.
have an effect on
But I don't think it's affecting your iPad.
You guys don't know that.
It's working, and it's very exciting.
That's me and Matt after the show last night.
The story about Donald Trump's taxes. Now, to be clear, it's being reported as if his taxes have been acquired by the New York Times. It is not his taxes. What they have... They've only gotten the essentially the top sheets of his taxes, which are the 1040 forms from 1985 to 1994. However, and so it doesn't really quite show the mechanisms of this happening, but the big stories are that Donald Trump apparently, and again, it's hard to really even determine this, I think, from the top sheet because businesses, individuals can make it look like they've lost a lot of money. For eight of those 10 years, he did not pay any federal taxes. And wealthy people have mechanisms that are legal, sometimes not legal, sometimes shouldn't be legal, but are legal, to make it look like they have less money or less income and therefore... pay less taxes.
You think Trump might be involved in something like that?
I would be shocked, but yes, I do. It also appears in multiple years, he appears to have lost more money than nearly any other single individual taxpayer in the country.
The one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters.
God. Like, why do we even bother to pay our taxes? Jesus Christ.
That's such a good drop. there was also some type of weird spike in his income in 1989 that nobody can account for of $52 million.
Everyone knows that, and it almost wouldn't even have to be said.
Yeah, there you go. But the interesting thing about this is that what this does is it furthers the argument of the... Now, there is statutory language that says a congressional committee can get anybody's taxes for any reason. You do not need to have a compelling government interest. But Mnuchin was arguing that there needs to be a compelling government interest. Well, the statute was written in response to a scandal where the taxes were required to determine if there was a scandal, if somebody was paying taxes. And so when you have this now in the public record, even Mnuchin's fake assertion that you need to have a compelling interest now seems to be fairly satisfied. We have someone who was the largest money loser in the country, like literally that guy, maybe him and one other guy, and I'm sure it's a guy. And he paid no taxes from 8 to 10 years, yet he's a billionaire. That seems like a compelling interest from a policy standpoint, never mind from any other, from a policy standpoint. We should not have billionaires who build their billionaire. Now, maybe he's not really a billionaire, but he certainly has claims he is. So we should not have billionaires in this country. Well, I would put a period after that. But for the sake of this argument, let's have it a comma. We should not have billionaires in this country who have built that financial empire without having paid taxes along the way. We need to change the policy in this country. And so let's have a committee look at its taxes. There's your compelling interest.
Totally
now, I don't
unfair.
Know. Maybe that
what the
was
hell's going on.
Maybe that's a coincidence. Maybe it's not. I don't know where they got those taxes from. We were trying to figure out maybe it was one of his ex-wives. Now, he was married to Ivana during that entire period, except the last 2 years. They divorced in 92. Now, it's not inconceivable, according to a perhaps some type of divorce settlement, that Ivana would not have gotten hold of any number of 1040, the top sheets of these forms for the next 2 years, 5 years. That seems conceivable, certainly in the context of my proceedings. We're going to check in with incomes in terms of determining child support. Neither one of us is a billionaire, and neither one of us, but it's conceivable. So it could have come from her, which would be the least problematic in some way. But, you know, look, people leak things. I don't know. I hope it's not from the government. But
my money's on Tiffany. She's the wild card in all this. She clearly hates him.
Tiffany's pretty cool.
Hey, Dad, what's that out there on the thing? And she's photocopying 1040s. Years ago. Now, the other thing that's interesting here, too, is that we know there are ongoing investigations into the taxes of the Trump family. And we know this in part because Donald Trump's sister resigned to avoid at least one of these investigations. His older sister, Marianne Trump Barry, was a federal appellate judge up until less than a month ago. 3 weeks ago, she resigned. There was a court inquiry. Now, this is a court inquiry that came from complaints that were filed last October after the investigation by the New York Times, which reported that the Trump family generationally had engaged in dubious tax schemes during the 1990s, including instances of outright fraud that greatly increased the inherited value, the wealth of Mr. Trump and his siblings.
What?
Judge Barry not only benefited financially from most of those tax schemes, the Times found, this is also in the Times, she was also in a position to influence the actions taken by her family. So in other words, she wasn't just along for the ride. She had to sign off on things. So in a letter of February 1st, a court official notified the four officials who had filed complaints that the investigation was receiving the full attention of a judicial conduct counsel. And then, 10 days later, Judge Barry filed her retirement papers. Here's what happens to such investigations when someone retires from the court. They end. Seems like a good time just to move down to Mar-a-Lago. The investigation becomes moot since retired judges are not subject to the conduct rules. And the people who filed complaints were notified in mid-April that the matter, or early April, had been dropped without a finding on the merits of allegations.
That seems like a poor system, just irrespective of Trump, that you stop investigating judges. It's like they can keep doing corrupt stuff until they're about to get caught, and then they retire, and then...
Well, this is different, because it's conceivable that what the Times found, the statute of limitations would have expired. However, so from a criminal conduct standpoint, you would be you would not be liable. But as a sitting judge, and this is awkward, there's actually a higher standard that is applied to you so that you don't get away with like, hey, this is the statute of limitations. Yeah, I was a scumbag 20 years ago, but now I'm a judge. Look at me.
Totally unfair to my sister.
People change.
So she could have lost her job, and what would have happened when you lose your job in that manner? You lose your annual pension as a judge, which in her case ranges from $184,000 a year to $217,000 a year. How would you like that for a pension? Man. I will tell you this right now. Someone wants to offer me that as a pension. Guess what? Early retirement. Actually, that also, I wonder if that isn't a good recipe for someone to go after Clarence Thomas. Anyways, so we have this report that Donald Trump has, over the course of 10 years, from 85 to 94, I think it was, lost $1 billion. The single biggest loser of money in the country. So much so they didn't have to pay taxes for 8 out of 10 years. Howard's friends at Fox and Friends taking the news. My guess is this is good for Trump.
It is an interesting look, though, at how New York City real estate developers worked in the 80s and the 90s.
If anything, you read this and you're like, wow, it's pretty impressive, all the things that he's done in his life. It's beyond what most of us could ever achieve.
I don't know that there's any suggestion that he broke the law.
Yeah.
I think the suggestion is simply that he used the tax laws to his benefit.
I think most of us could not lose $1 billion. I agree.
It's true.
Most of us were not given that kind of money by our
You're
parents
not given...
through various fraudulent schemes, and we didn't have the capacity to lose it in all sorts of narcissistic, delusional business ventures.
That's right, Ainsley. Just get impressed by the glamour of it all.
These
You're
guys.
Getting $1 billion from your dad. You're losing $1 billion. You're defrauding the government. Dad's helping you with the casino. It's just a big, heady mix of glamour.
Now, I like how they say New York Times leaks a decade of Trump tax returns. Now, of course, the New York Times is not leaking it. They didn't have it. The leak was to them, or someone gave it to them, and they are publishing it. But
no, the New York Times is Trump's accountant.
There
That's
go,
why
right?
they had the taxes.
Yeah, yeah. Here we go.
Because I like Jewish guys handling my
I
money.
I love this.
Sulzbecker.
Businessman, which is chronicled here. There's nothing about this article that should surprise anybody that got the Daily News and New York Post throughout the last 10 years. Just give details. Here's an example. he's had pass-through income. So, for example, there might be an incentive to go buy that building, to buy that casino, because I'll take a loss this year in order on my tax returns because I want to buy for a rainy day. I have the resources. He goes, there was a time that he was actually building his empire. The information focused year by year at a time of gathering loss. He bought his partners out of Trump Tower, the Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino. He bought an apartment building in West Palm Beach for $43 million and business losses for $68.7 million. For us, or at least for me, I can't imagine having that much money, spending that much money, and being in debt. For him, it makes sense. He's buying now, building it up because he had confidence. He knows the properties would be worth more. The properties began to build in 86. He bought, in 87, he spent $29 million on a yacht. The market crashed the next day. So no problem. He held on to it. He bought a shuttle operation. It didn't do too well, but he held on to it. But when
the yacht is a business expense? Is that what we're supposed to say?
Yes. That's where you have underage. Excuse me.
What?
Meetings. It's for meetings.
You meet people.
Meetings. It's a meeting. It's
you have a lot of meetings.
Conference yacht. Conference yacht.
Operation. It didn't do too well, but he held on to it. But when he sells it, he takes the loss on his taxes. So for you or I, maybe buying a summer home is a big move, or maybe even a trailer. But for Donald Trump, he says, I got some money, but I want to really expand my empire. I want to take chances.
Pause it. Wait a second. So if you sell your second home at a loss, that's a business expense? That's the thing that's a little bit fishy here. The things that are constituting business losses are very odd. And one wonders where, if he's this heavily in debt.
Dad rode off the limo ride to come buy chips at
where's
my casino
all the cash
to save
coming?
My
yeah, exactly.
Business.
I mean, so, and look, I'm not going to pretend to understand any of this stuff. I have an account and do my taxes. I don't understand any of it. However, it seems like this is a perfect predicate for Congress to look at these taxes. I mean, this would be a great learning experience. Maybe they can get Brian Kilmeade up there to work with the committee to explain to the country after he takes a look at all the taxes, like why this is just exactly what you would expect from a successful businessman.
Well, it's also like the way Kilmeade says Trump decided he wanted to take risks. It's like the government's insulating him from any sort of downside on these risks.
Right. It doesn't seem like there's much risks. He lost $1 billion and he still has billions of dollars. Folks, one of today's sponsors is Skillshare. And anyone who goes to skl.sh/majorityreport3, note the three, new, it is a new URL, is going to get 2 whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that are going to be useful for you both in your personal and your professional life. Whether you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing, or you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Jamie, Photoshop, you name it.
Hola.
Here's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be doing this, I think, over the next... I always say this, but I maybe I'm getting too aggressive with this, but getting started with wine, buying smarter, tasting more, basically because I want to surprise my sister, who's sort of a wine professional.
Jasmine.
So jasmine and wine.
Oh, it had a root vegetable.
It doesn't know.
I don't.
And then the other one,
no,
I had the other one is and this one's fairly basic, but I want to take pictures with your iPhone like a pro. Those are the two ones I'm going to do. Just small incremental value adds to my life. That's my whole new strategy.
Let's take a selfie with the wine before the evening progresses.
Oh my God. You can get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majorityreport3. Just think of everything you can have at your fingertips for a whole 2 months. Again, that's skl.sh/majorityreport3. I put a link underneath this video on YouTube, and I put a link in the podcast description. Check it out. Also, the Majority Report is being supported in part today by Simple Habit. Simple Habit is a mobile app that provides a massive and diverse library of 5-minute guided meditations. And the Majority Report audience can try Simple Habit today, totally free for an entire week, when you go to simplehabit.com/majority. Today for an entire week. You can't do the entire week in one day, but starting today, you can check it out for an entire week. Simplehabit.com/majority. There is a growing amount of scientific information on the benefits of meditation. There's also anecdata. Mike, right?
Correct.
Anecdata. Simple Habit has over 2,000 guided meditations specially designed for different parts of your day and just about anything you might be dealing with in life. Guided meditations for mindfulness, when you're wanting to overcome procrastination, when you got something important at work going on, maybe it's stressing you out. Meditations designed for parents. You will not yell at the children, Sam. They have meditations made specifically for when you're waking up or your lunch break or when you've just gotten home from work or when you're going to bed. I mean, I am still trying to sort of get into the rhythm of doing it on a regular basis. But I have found when I do meditate, I think I'm a little bit calmer. Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I think I am.
I think so, too.
When Mila and Saul are driving me nuts, I just...
Serenity now.
Serenity
breathe
now.
In. You
different
hate
people
your children.
Try and different.
Breathe
try,
out. Try, you sort of dislike them.
And accomplish different things with meditation. Simple Habit is able to cater just about anyone. Doesn't matter what your goals are with meditation, how much past experience you've had with meditation. It's the variety of guided meditations on Simple Habit is what sets it apart, and that's why it won the 2018 Google Play Award for Best Well-Being App. It's available on iOS, Android, web browser, all of it. Majority Report audience can try it for free for a week by going to simplehabit.com/majority. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening to the podcast, check the description. We have the link is right there for you as well. All right, folks. So this is a little bit disturbing. The other day we had on the program Robin Marty, was it? And she was basically talking about her book, The Handbook for a Post-Roe America. And in some respects, I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're very, very close. There are now 6 states that have passed the so-called heartbeat law. And I say so-called because it really is more of what is known as cardiac activity, and it comes from a tissue called the fetal pole, right? Because, and you can measure that as early as 6 weeks with a vaginal probe. Now, I'm not telling women anything about this, but for most men, to be pregnant at 6 weeks, the average woman would not know that they were pregnant at 6 weeks. Your period's supposed to come 4 weeks. Some people, sometimes it comes 5 weeks. So now you're 2 weeks late for your period. At that point, under this law, it would be illegal for you to get an abortion. So in an instance like this one, an Ohio man accused of raping an 11-year-old girl just got a $1 million bond. He was arrested last week. The girl's mother filed a missing person report, and the suspect's roommate allowed police to search their home. The 11-year-old girl was found in an upstairs bedroom closet. Now, apparently, this guy was already the subject of an ongoing sexual assault investigation involving the girl. In addition to the rape charges, he's also facing charges of obstructing official business and contributing to the unruliness or delinquency of a child. Here's the thing. That 11-year-old girl has been found to be pregnant. And according to the Buckeye Report, Ohio's new heartbeat bill would mean that the 11-year-old girl will likely be forced to carry the child to birth. Now, I don't know if the bill has been quite, or I'm sorry, the law has been enacted. It's certainly been signed. I guess it has been enacted at this point. It will be challenged. I don't know if the challenge will come quick enough and there will be a stay put on this law. But it's quite possible that this 11-year-old girl will be forced to give birth to the child of her rapist. But certainly, and I don't know what will happen in this specific case, because like I say, we're still going to see challenges to these laws. But a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, this is going to be the law. This one may be stayed until the Supreme Court can hear it. It'll work its way up through cases. Hopefully, it will be stayed so that she can get an abortion. If it's not stayed, she will not be able to get an abortion. She will be forced to carry this rapist's child, this 11-year-old girl. 3 or 4 years from now, this is just going to be the case. There's not going to be any qualifying. This may or may not happen. This will be the case. There are five other states that have passed this bill. Georgia is the most recent. 15 states have introduced similar legislation this year. Kentucky, Mississippi, and Ohio have signed theirs into law. Laws have yet to be enacted because they're being upheld by courts. I mean, or stopped by courts, but we will see. And the reason why they're all passing these laws is because they know this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and you now have a severe enough right-wing majority that we're going to see Roe overturned or at least inhibited enough by this. Now, understand, you know, we're talking 6 weeks. 6 weeks. Most women do not know they're even pregnant at that point. There are only, and let's just talk a little bit about, I should say, there's a couple other things about the Georgia law. Women who seek lawful abortions out of state, according to this law, if a Georgia resident plans to travel elsewhere to obtain abortion, she may be charged with conspiracy to commit murder, punishable by 10 years imprisonment. Any individual who helps her may be charged with conspiracy. HB 481 would also have consequences for women who get abortions from doctors or miscarry. If you seek out an illegal abortion from a healthcare provider, as a woman, you would be a party to murder. If a woman miscarries because of her own conduct, she wore drugs, I don't know, maybe she engaged in activity that was too physically risky, I don't know, be liable for second-degree murder. Prosecutors would be able to interrogate women who miscarry to determine whether they could be held responsible. These are, yeah, and look, That makes sense. That makes sense. If it's going to be a crime, if it's going to be a crime, it's going to be a crime. OBGYN named Dr. Jen Gunter. You can find her on Twitter. Does a very good breakdown of one of the big talking points that we're hearing now, this notion of infanticide. And there are only 7 states that have no gestational age restrictions on a pregnancy. Most states do not allow abortions after 20 or 24 weeks. In these situations where supposedly they're killing babies who are born. Apparently, when you... there are times where the baby has... That are anomalies that are prenatally detected. That the fetus has. And they can actually be born where you have an option of referring to that, of saying to the doctors, I want a live birth or a non-live birth. And all the only difference there is that they would actually have, they would charge you for maternity care and write a birth certificate, even though they know that this delivered baby will die within moments because of the anomalies. This apparently happened to this doctor herself. But it's a good breakdown. We'll try and link to it in the site. It's Dr. Jen Gunter, and she gives a very good breakdown of this stuff. Her... her Twitter handle is DRGEN Gunter. And we'll put a link to the, here it is. Yes. Yeah, this is the piece. And she starts with Ben Shapiro going after Elizabeth Warren. So, but, you know, folks got to be prepared for this because... There are very few scenarios that don't involve, frankly, the untimely demise of a Supreme Court justice that don't squarely place this these type of things I'm talking about in our future. I mean, full on, it is payback time. There is no way. There is no way the Republican Party, and I think even John Roberts understands this, they need to deliver now on these things. They have no excuses. And like I say, the only possible scenario is that for some reason, Clarence Thomas does not resign until 2021 when Amy Klobuchar is president. And
whoa. There's already so much negativity in this show. No, just for God's sake, just Bernie Sanders is president. Bernie. Let's just be a little positive, for Christ's sake. I mean, and God, if you're going to be negative, could you at least give me Harris?
Listen.
Amy Klobuchar.
Whatever. I'm just used. The no, point is, a God. Democrat is president.
That is a bleak world right there.
But the fact is, even if Amy Klobuchar is president and and Clarence Thomas resigns at that point, you're in much better shape than you are if he does so when Donald Trump is president. And that's really is my point here, is that that difference is going to be the difference between me not saying a story about an 11-year-old girl who's raped, who's forced to carry the child, or women who sought a legal abortion in New York but were that left Georgia to do so, arrested and imprisoned for 20 years. That's literally the difference. Like, so we can even make what we perceive as the worst case scenario President Amy Klobuchar or Vice President Joe Biden or vice versa. Even in that scenario. But that would require Clarence Thomas to say, like, I want to hang on for another 3 years. So I don't know how that even that scenario happens. But this is what the future we're looking at. This is the implications of the Supreme Court. I mean, obviously, they're much broader and wider than this, but this is how severe it is. And so people have to be prepared for this.
Yeah, it's time to break some laws. There's really no way around that.
Well, the point is that there'll be some laws broken, but if police get a hold of that woman who's taken out of Georgia, she's going to go to jail. And if they capture the people who help them out of jail, they're going to go to jail.
Yeah, I'm not excited about that fact. Yeah. It sucks. It sucks that we have to do this. But we also can't just lie down and die and say, well, abortion is illegal now. I guess we give up. We now live in Gilead.
I was not in any way telling people to lie down and die. I am against that. Totally against the lie down and die strategy.
I know.
I mean, it's not law yet. It's not law yet. It very well may be prevented. And I don't think the Supreme Court, I have a feeling they're going to stay all of these until after the election.
Well, also for a lot of people, that situation is already here. Where, you know, that death by a thousand cuts, where abortion access is so restricted to so many people in so many places, it would certainly be a lot worse if Roe versus Wade was overturned. But, you know, we need to be organizing yesterday.
There are people who are already organizing. I mean, there are organizations that are going out there and they're funding, helping women who don't have access to abortion getting it. Now, that would be illegal under this Georgia law. There would be no organizing that would be legal then. So, I mean, we do have organizations that, and I have no doubt that the number of women who don't have access to abortion who would in a, if we didn't have such hostility towards that right, is not zero. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but the difference is going to be dramatic, and there's not going to be legal organizing that will mitigate it going forward. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi has an evolving perspective on impeachment. I'm not sure I know what this means, but here's Nancy Pelosi talking to Washington Post Robert Costa. And the Democrats, I mean, there's clearly a scenario that's playing out where the Trump administration seems to be daring Democrats to impeach him. They are pushing it. And I think the theory from the Trump administration is we're playing a game of chicken. Even if they come after us and try and impeach us, I can't get removed from office. It's fine for Bill Clinton. It'll satisfy those people who are Democrats, maybe more the base of the Democratic Party. But independents, the polling is supposedly bad on impeachment, and this is going to alienate the Democrats from voters that they will need. That is undoubtedly the administration's perspective on this. Nancy Pelosi may accept that calculation or may be slowly realizing I cannot avoid, there is too much to be lost by not impeaching in terms of the enthusiasm of the Democratic base. But the point is, at one point, you got to cut bait and make this decision, and then you got to go full hog and explain to the people of the United States why this guy needs to be impeached. That doesn't mean removed from office. It means like it's a form of censure. Because we know the Senate is not going to remove him and convict him. And so, you know, I'm starting to think that, and I think like, you know, this is one of those situations where it's like my hesitation about impeachment has been you're not saving anything for the second term. But I think you basically have come around to where I think that, you know, we're the same things that are moving Pelosi. Like, if you don't impeach him now, it looks just too weak. They are challenging it too much. And it's making the Democrats look too weak. And it's making them look muddled. Seems to me Nancy Pelosi could come out now and say, we're going to pursue impeachment. We know it's not going to remove him from office, but there has been an extraordinary amount of lawbreaking. We need to censure him on behalf of the American public. We will move forward with the operations of government because he will be the president until that election, but we need to impeach. We need to impeach because we need to send a message that lawbreaking is wrong, and this is the only mechanism, and if the Republicans won't join us, that's on them. Here she is with Costas.
About Don McGahn, you're facing challenges not just from the AG, but the White House is citing executive privilege, thinking about asserting it as they make their case against Congress. Can you hold him in contempt, Mr. McGahn, for refusing congressional demands?
Well, we don't know that he has yet. Let's take it one step at a time. Let's see where it goes. And I have said the president is goading us into, wants to goad us into impeachment because that he knows, as do I, that's not a good thing for the country. Well, maybe he knows that, but he knows that I think that. Let's put it that way. He knows that I think that. But the point is that every single day, whether it's obstruction of having people come to the table with facts, ignoring subpoenas and the rest, every single day, the president is making a case. He's becoming self-impeachable in terms of some of the things that he is
doing. Well, let's pause there. That's an important point you just made. You think about 1974.
Yeah.
The House Democrats had their articles of impeachment against President Nixon. Article 3 of the impeachment proceedings then was about obstruction of Congress, about abuse of power. Could there be an option for Democrats that you would consider of a narrow impeachment proceeding against President Trump about the issues you just raised, obstruction of Congress?
Let me just say that right now we have our committees doing the investigation. Since you mentioned 1974, at that time, Congress took months to build a case. They did investigations. Sam Rubin wasn't the Judiciary Committee. That was the committee that was doing the investigation. And then they, with the information they gathered, they came to that conclusion. But we really, you know, we ran and won on For the People agenda.
Yeah, you can chew gum and walk at the same time. I mean, the For the People agenda cannot be implemented if you have a chief executive officer of the chief of the executive branch who is breaking the laws repeatedly. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And I think the idea is be honest with the American public. We're not going to be able to get him out of office. We need to impeach as a way of putting down a marker. The American people need to say to not just this president, but to any future president, you cannot break the law without some accountability. And the Republican Party can stop you from being punished. They can pardon you. They can commute your sentence. But they cannot keep us from holding you to account for your lawbreaking. That should be the message. And that way you can also implicate the Republican Party because they are implicated in this. They are completely implicated in this. In all of it. In all of it. Here's Jerry Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, basically saying that we are in a constitutional crisis at this moment, as the president is denying, and the executive branch are denying lawful requests of information, subpoenas from Congress. This is beyond norm breaking. These are constitutionally valid procedures that the president and the executive branch are breaking. And the tough part is they can go to the courts. But the judiciary is very hesitant to get involved in a fight between these two branches of government. Impeachment is really one of the few ways in which the judiciary will step in and say, okay, if you guys are taking it to this level, we can adjudicate that. So by having, let's say, a joint, you know, like a select committee on impeachment, let's say. So you're not actually starting the impeachment procedures. You're starting a committee to investigate the issues that would be a form of impeachment. Just get it out there. That will provide some measure of authority to these congressional attempts to get this information. I mean, and I think Nadler is now just out there and he's trying to get public support for this.
It sounds like you're saying a monarchy, but by another name, it's a constitutional crisis. Where do you think?
Well, the phrase constitutional crisis has been overused, but certainly.
Certainly what?
Certainly it's a constitutional crisis, although I don't like to use that phrase because it's been used for far less dangerous situations. The phrase has been overused.
I hear you, but you feel that we are currently in a constitutional crisis or headed for one?
No, we're in one. We're in one because the president is disobeying the law, is refusing all information to Congress, which means that he's told the head of his nominee for head of Homeland Security close the border, and he said, well, that's illegal. He said, don't worry, I'll protect you. That's a lawless administration. We cannot have a lawless administration.
There you have it. I got you covered. I got some good lawyers. You need to lose some money? I can work that out, too.
I can see my way to looking past this.
But what if there wasn't a law?
I'm giving
you... Sit back. Dream with me.
Special. All right. One more thing I wanted to talk about on the free show, and then we got to go, is Iran has basically announced that it will stop complying with parts of the nuclear deal. They are still in compliance as of yesterday. And they are in the nuclear deal. Remember, this is an international accord. This is not just the United States, which is why the United States had not the ability to refreeze assets internationally or to impose an international embargo. However, the United States can make it very hard and has been punishing European and foreign entities that have been doing business with Iran. And so Iran has been starved of some resources. Rouhani basically has told folks like the Chinese and Europeans that you need to compensate us for the cost of the American sanctions in some measure. And starting Wednesday, Iran is now going to build up its stockpiles of low-enriched uranium and heavy water used in nuclear reactors, including a reactor that could give Iran source of bomb-grade plutonium. So basically what they're doing is we're basically starting up the factory for our nuclear program, but one of them is a dual-use program. We're not going to make the bomb-grade plutonium, but we're starting up the machine that could. And under this announcement, Europeans now have 2 months to figure out a way for Iran to basically sell their oil and to get some of their banking done. And if that doesn't happen, then they're going to start to develop uranium that exceeds the grade level of industrial use. And they're going to start to enrich uranium enough to make it bomb grade. So this is the plan, right? I mean, this is John Bolton putting a brick, tying it to the accelerator and attempting to see what happens next with the car as it goes careening down the road.
Well, I mean, and they've been, you know, making things up and distorting intelligence. And I mean, this could be it. I mean, this could be the thing they were triggering, even as they've been basically engaging in psychological and economic terrorism the past year and using it. I mean, They're using it in trade negotiations with China as an example. Like, this is an area that the Chinese can capitulate to them on in exchange for other things that are more important to China. But I think it's also just really worth noting that going back to the beginning, it has never been documented conclusively ever that the Iranian government is lying about its program. So I'm not to say to take them at face value, but there have never been clear intelligence estimates that they were developing a weapon. And they, you know, restarted. They basically shut down the Shah's program in the 80s. And the only reason at the time they restarted it was because the United States and other world powers like France and Germany were selling Saddam Hussein weapons when he used chemical weapons against Iran. And Iranian leadership was like, well, if all members of the Security Council are going to sell a guy who's using chemical weapons against us, maybe we'll, weaponry, maybe we'll set things up for ourselves. But even this move, just to be very, very clear, is in no way, an indication or promise that they want to weaponize. It could even just be, they're losing options with their energy.
Theoretically, this could be performative. It's the only leverage they have.
Yes.
And so it's not unlike, any other, if you don't, it's the only leverage they have.
And Rouhani even said, Rouhani said in the speech, that this deal was a good thing. It was working. The Europeans still want it. We've been terrorizing the Europeans as well. And of course, the other thing is, it's amazing that Rouhani and Sharif are still in position, because when the Supreme Leader said 3 years ago, he gave them public permission to do these negotiations and said, and never trust the United States, and I expect that this will be a disaster. So, well played.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a quick break, head into the fun half, ladies and gentlemen, where we got a lot of fun stuff today. We got Meghan McCain. We got Nick DiPaolo, my own personal story about Nick DiPaolo. I've got a good story about Nick DiPaolo. It's not great, but it's good. I may have mentioned it in the past on the show, but now I feel quite comfortable doing it. We got a wonderful moment of Dave Rubin, too. It's all in the fun half for you today, folks.
Ideas.
646-257-3920 is the number. Just a reminder, you can support this show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, become a member. Not only do you support the free show, not only do you pay for my menthol eucalyptus cough drops, but you also get
the cough drop in before free. It creates an allergy.
Free what?
Oh, excuse me. Wait, what are your eucalyptus mint? So not. There's no lavender involved. I'm sorry.
Also,
hopefully you will get for my therapy, a sensitivity my to therapy. Eucalyptus and mint.
We give you extra content every day, as well as you also have access to all of our archives of all our fun halves and no commercials. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Michael got in at 11 today, so that means the last night was Tuesday. Michael, what happened?
Reniqua Allen joined us to talk about her book, It Was a Dream. It was all a dream. Ben Burgess. She was on the show, too. Really good guest. Very, very good book. Ben Burgess discussed understanding dialectics through Hegel and Marx.
He explained that even if you use ad hominems, your arguments can be logical.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's just big for all of us, because if you tack on a fun ad hom to a logical argument, that's just style. And if the person is only responding to the style, they're being illogical because they're not taking on your argument. So a lot of useful information. Plus,
so if A, then B, douchebag.
Exactly.
Like, actually, literally.
Literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very validating all the ad hominems we do here.
Yes, and if all you are doing is whining about the douchebag part, you haven't answered A or B.
You're being overly emotional.
You're being overly emotional, not engaging in a rational exchange of ideas. We also talked about who really wants freedom. Of course, it's an argument for Medicare for all. And I'd run down on what's happening with Iran and tons more at patreon.com/TMBS. patreon.com/TMBS. Also, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. We're almost at our first 44,000 patrons, subscribers on YouTube. Get us there soon.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, out today, we have an episode with Katie Halper, hostess of the Katie Halper Show, wherein we talk about 90s nostalgia, because as we all know, Joe Biden is running for president and the 90s are back. We talk about liberal hypocrisy regarding Juanita Broderick. We talk about Joe Biden's handling of Anita Hill and his touchy-feely problems with women. We also sip from a large cup of Laura Loomer's tears over being deplatformed. We sing a little song and we make some indecent proposals to famous people.
Joe Biden did not run for president in the 90s.
Yes, I know. But he's bringing back 90s politics to now.
Okay.
And also a lot of things that happened in the 90s prefigured a lot of things that are happening today. That's kind of the thesis of the episode. In between,
I'm not saying the 90s aren't worth exploring. Believe me, those were my years.
90s were a great time.
Great time.
Oh. There was Zima was flowing. Sitcoms were being made.
The Zima was flowing.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Zima,
Ace of Base cranked in the background, though I never heard it.
I can't wait till I'm old enough to drink Zima. But then when I was, it wasn't around anymore.
No, we drank it all.
Damn you. I'm sure there's some like in a dusty basement somewhere.
We drank every last bottle of that Zima.
Oh, and also I got to plug the live show that I'm doing with Katie Halper at Struggle Session, featuring guests Jake Flores, Matt Taibbi, and myself. And that is this Friday, 2 days from now in Brooklyn at Littlefield. Come on down.
Saturday on the Literary Hangover, The Song of Hiawatha by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. It's a one of the more, it was a bestseller. He sold a lot of these poems in the mid-1850s. So we're going to look into that and check that out.
All right, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.